What happened to the pants? They were dirty. Oh, okay. Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, page 61. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, summarizing, he hides his real shame and suffering. So this is Jarasandha. Right? Yes, Jarasandha. You can see this effect operating now. He speaks in the plural to indicate all the warriors pleasant, or this verse can be spoken by all the warriors. All of us have been defeated. In this verse, he uses the name Krishna in order to show disrespect. Though we are leaders of armies, most valorous, we were defeated by the Yadus protected by the son of a cowherd. This indicates the Yadus' inferior status, right? Because they must be from the Surya dynasties, so they'll always consider the moon dynasty as less. And so now they're making it even more less by connecting it that they're led by a cowherd. Like that. But they have to remember that this cowherd just put him in their place, right? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Thus persuaded by his friends, Shishupal took his followers and went back to his capital. The surviving warriors also returned to their respective cities. That means whoever was left. So, in other words, they'd fight until they decided this is crazy, so then when they pulled back, so that many were left. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, although in the beginning the princes had been full of hope for success in their heroic action, after their defeat they could only try to encourage Shishupal with flattering words. Thus, Shishupal, instead of marrying Rukmini, had to be satisfied with the flattering words of his friends. And he returned home in disappointment. The kings who had come to assist him, also disappointed, then returned to their respective kingdoms. So the Yadus, then they would be fighting, but only as long as the others are fighting, because it's not like they've come for a battle or there's some revenge or anything. So they just fight up to that point. They stop, then you stop, because all it is that you want to stop them bothering Krishna and Rukmini. Right? So they're fighting in a very fair way. So, because all this went in this way, these kings are defeated, they're feeling bad, so they all went home in disappointment. Verses 18 to 36, the disfiguring of Rukmini. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Powerful Rukmini, however, was especially envious of Krishna. He could not bear the fact that Krishna carried off his sister to marry her in the Rakshasa style. Thus he pursued the Lord with an entire military division. Frustrated and enraged, mighty armed Rukmini, dressed in armor and wielding his bow, had sworn before all the kings, I shall not again enter Kundina if I do not kill Krishna in battle and bring Rukmini back with me. I swear this to you. See, that's the problem with Kshatriyas. They say these things and they have to do them. They can't just say them because, you know, that's what they feel like. No, they actually have to do it. So, but it's important because if they say something and they do it, then the public will have that faith, and so they'll have a good reputation. So if they say something should happen or something should be done, then they're very supportive. Yeah.
Marathi.
They're singing Marathi. Okay, I was going to say, because it doesn't quite work. He's in for Bengali. So I must be Marathi, so that would be Tukaram then. Because you can get much of it, but you can't get all of it. So any of the Prakrit languages, they can understand each other, at least from the north and east, you know, that are based off of Sanskrit directly. And so they're Prakrits of Sanskrit. But like Paisaj, that's already a Prakrit. And then from that, you're deriving Prakrits from that in the form of Telugu, Tamil, Kannada, and what's the other?
Malayalam.
Yeah, okay. Because those are being taken off of Paisaj, from what I understand, because Agastya took them down there. And so he had to find a language that would be in between the Brahmins from the north and the Dravidians in the south. So then he brought in the Tamil language, like that. So despite their saying that Tamil was first, Sanskrit was first, and it's a derivative of a derivative.
Marathi is a direct derivative of Sanskrit.
Yes. Yes. No, it means everything other than those four. It means, in other words, if you write it and it's in bubbles, other than Orissan. Orissan is just Bengali with pan. You chew pan and speak Bengali, you get Orissan. Like that. And, you know, all the languages have their origin like that. You're not from Orissa, are you? Okay. You know? And you know how mountain people speak different? So that's Assamese. Bengali in the mountains.
In English?
English? Prabhupada said it's for, I think, talking to horses. He said, English is for horses, French is for women, German is for dogs, and Italian is for speaking to God.
Italian is for speak what?
Huh? For speaking to the gods, yes.
Mark Twain said that.
He said that.
Latin is I talk to God, Spanish I talk to men, French I talk to women, and English has something, and I vomit in German.
Good work. Good work. I see. The problem is that it was for speaking to dogs. He is very exact and everything, and so dogs can understand. The Russian didn't know. No, somehow another didn't. Didn't make it into this list. Yes.
But in this case, if Rukmi could like kill somebody who has kidnapped the girl and bring the girl back, could the girl be married to someone else? Because she's already.
Basically, he doesn't accept. He could not bear the fact that he's that. So they'll just kind of finesse it. And I'm sure that Shishupal wouldn't mind because they're so overwhelmed by the material energy. Or if at that point then we could say this and then, you know, whatever. It'll all be based on false ego. But technically, not really, but at the same time as they on one level they haven't been married. Because Rakshasa is one of the forms of getting married, but it's not considered like your official form of getting married, unless you're a Rakshasa. And that's the way. That's just the standard. You know, you go capture the girl, take her home, then you're married. That's it. No, you don't have nothing else. I'm not sure if you have to distribute sweets or anything, but you know, that's it. You know. Yeah, but it's just, he's not happy with it. So, because all the others, they fight, but then at the same time is when they see that it's okay. That Rukmi's.
It's not their sister.
No, it's not their sister. At the same time as Shishupal's not doing anything, so if he's not, why should... If Shishupal was in the front fighting, then they all would have kept fighting. But he wasn't fighting. He was just there lamenting, and so they're saying, you know, why are we going to fight for this guy? Right?
You know. When Kshatriyas, you know, they take such vows, they don't use their intelligence.
They don't lose their intelligence? They don't use their intelligence?
Because...
Remember, what is their modes?
Passion.
Passions. So that means they do things with all that vibrato. Means it should be based on. So we see is that when Arjuna makes a vow or others like this, it's based on the dharmic aspect. So with Rukmi, you can see it's not exactly, it's unimportant at this point. You know, it's just because he went against his wishes. So that's why he wants to get Krishna. Because he had some other plans. Because it was, everybody wanted her to marry Krishna. He's the only one that didn't. So then he arranged it otherwise. So then it's just not going according to his plan. Okay. Having said this, he mounted his chariot and told his charioteer, "Drive the horses quickly to where Krishna is. He and I must fight." This wicked-minded cowherd boy, infatuated with his prowess, has violently abducted my sister, but today I remove his pride with my sharp arrows. Right, so he's a cowherd boy, but then the point is he has prowess. I mean, it's just, he just wiped out all these other armies. They're not quite catching Rukmi's, like you said, it's not necessarily they're fully using their intelligence in this case. That's why then the higher grade, there's more goodness. It's like Karna considered Yudhishthir Maharaj a Brahmin. You know, so he wouldn't fight with him. Because he just considered, no, he's too septic. He's not one of us. Violently abducted his sister. He just, you know, pulled up there. She kind of came up very nicely. He pulled her up on the chariot. They drove off nice and slow. But, you know, this is how they see. You know, they're the lions, and then she's been taken away by the jackals. When it's actually they're the jackals, and she's been taken away. So the mode of ignorance then reverses everything. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Sridhar Swami has given another meaning to the words Gopalasya and Su Durmatehe, so that Krishna is praised. Gopalasya means of he who protects the Vedas. Su Durmatehe means having a mind merciful even to the demons. He does this to show that the meaning presented by Rukmi was not appropriate. The meaning is this. Gopalasya refers to Swayam Bhagavan, the subject of the 10-syllable and 18-syllable mantras, representing the Vedas, which have no beginning and no end, whose perfect, extraordinary sweetness and powers are presented in his pastimes and form. Why do many people have inclinations elsewhere? He is very hard to understand, Sudurmatehe. I will destroy my own pride in my prowess by his sharp arrows. His power is shown, means by Krishna's power, right? By him my sister was taken and all kings will be defeated. Or by him I am defeated. So that's the other way to look at the... like that. So that's the one nice thing about language, because it's meant to express the proper moods and everything like that. So everything's actually connected to Krishna. So even though the demons are saying so many things, then we see that people interpret, so Rukmi interprets it wrong. So the words he said, he's deriving the wrong meaning from them. When actually they're a glorification of Krishna. That's the actual. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, boasting thus, foolish Rukmi, so here that answers your question, ignorant of the true extent of the Supreme Lord's power, approached Lord Govinda in his lone chariot and challenged him, "Just stand and fight." Rukmi drew his bow with great strength and struck Lord Krishna with 3 arrows. Then he said, "Stand here for a moment, O defiler of the Yadu dynasty." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Kula Pamsana can mean, O corrupter of your dynasty, but it can also mean, O protector of the dynasty, O killer of enemies. Kula Pa Amsana. Kshanam tishta can mean stand here for a moment. It can also mean ara ikshanam tishtata, stand so that I may glance upon you. So that's the things. So when it's used in the proper way, adjusting the wording so it means something connected to Krishna, then that's good. When it's used for mental speculation like the Maya bodies, in other words, that's a waste of time. Rukmi said, wherever you go, carrying off my sister like a crow stealing sacrificial butter, I will follow. This very day I shall relieve you of your false pride, you fool, you deceiver, you cheater in battle. Right? So he's just saying things that are connected with himself. Right? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti comments. The other meaning is, where are you going, not having stolen from me your own essence, Mahalakshmi? Rukmi said, I will steal my sister, releasing her from you, and will take her back to my house, like a crow takes the sacrificial offering. The other meaning is, please break the pride of this false warrior, myself, who is a fool and cheater. Right, so just depending upon how you break. So it's meant like, it's written like that, so you can play with it, you can do it express, because it has so many ways you can put, because one, you want to get direct meanings. You want to be able to play with it in joking ways. You want to be able to give hidden meanings. Does that make sense? You want to speak it in such a way, in a context, that some people think it in one way, but it means... So everybody will come up with their own understanding of it. So all this is very wonderful for the pastimes. But then when you come into the material world, where it's not all about Krishna, then it's all about whatever they're doing, their own self. Then the problem comes up is then this adjusting the words and all that, the word jargon, then that creates a problem. Yes.
If we take, for example, Maha Mantra, it has its own original meaning.
Yes.
And then we put our meaning while chanting it. So what does Krishna hear from?
It means you have the words, and then there's the intent that the words carry.
So if you're, says if one you're chanting thing, Hare, he hears different.
If you're chanting Hare Krishna, and actually you're saying, "Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?" Then you know that's what Krishna will hear. But at the same time, it's because you're chanting, you get the benefit of that. You'll hear that also.
That's why we don't get it.
Huh?
That's why we don't get it.
Yeah. The roads aren't good anyway, so you wouldn't want one. So. I think in Brazil they make a six-wheel drive Mercedes truck. That might be useful here. But I think they only make it in Brazil. No, it's that's what's heard, because it's, we're trying to chant to please Krishna, though we may be distracted, so Krishna hears that we're trying to serve him. That's what he'll hear. These other things, then, you know, depends upon how much they need to be dealt with. Yeah, so that's the thing. We chant the name, we're given the name, we chant the name, you know, coming in from the line, and so Krishna accepts it in that way. But he'll reciprocate according to our commitment to that chanting. Does that make sense? So it doesn't necessarily have to be equal. Karma is equal. The Krishna karma is you make a little effort, you get a lot more back. But still, you have to put in the effort. So when you try to chant nicely, Krishna reciprocates that. So, but if you don't try, then what's to reciprocate other than you're chanting, so that's nice.
Because he previously also mentioned that the Gayatri mantra. And apparently, you know, many devotees chant the same mantra, or they break it into two parts, you know, 10 syllables, 18 syllables. But then the destination is very different.
Brahma or Gopal?
Gopal. 18 and 10. That's
yeah, yeah, no, that's where I had the doubt. I thought you said Brahma.
Oh,
did you say Brahma?
No.
Said Gopal?
Oh, Gayatri. Yeah, I didn't mention specific.
Oh, okay. That's funny, because that's what we were talking about yesterday. Is the samskar. So when you say Gayatri, then
the Brahma.
I thought of Brahma, but yeah. You were just talking about Gopal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe that's how Krishna also hears.
I wouldn't worry about it. Don't read too much into it. So you're saying the 10 or 18?
People chant the same mantra.
Right.
But they achieve completely different destination than the Swarup and the
because
the
that's why where you get it from, what the line is, that's the whole point. So you get the line, it means our line has been given, is in that understanding of Braj. If you want to go to someplace sooner than Braj, you'll get there quicker. But if you want to go to Braj, then that's the method. You know what I'm saying? You take the local bus, you know, it stops at every stop, and here goes, sits in Dabulia, then goes that, and then you have the other bus that just goes from the front gate straight to Calcutta. That other one's quicker, even if you want to get off sooner. If you want to go to Krishnagar, catch the one up front, not the local one. Does that make sense? So the chanting, the mantras how we're given, those will take one all the way to Braj, if that's where you want to go. Does that make sense? So that's why I said that even the other sampradayas can get their conclusions from our sampradaya, because it just makes it so much easier and clear. Because Lord Chaitanya, being the Lord of the age, that's what he's given. And to the other acharyas, he's given a portion of that. Though everything coming from the Lord is complete and perfect, so therefore you have perfect, more perfect, most perfect. Is that?
Yeah, so the question is, why are we chanting 18 syllable instead of 10 syllable what Mahaprabhu chanted himself? He chanted the last part, and that was like, you know.
No, but but that's because he's come to taste what Radharani's tasting, so he only needs to chant that last part. But we have to kind of so he's already attracted, he's already engaged in activity, so then it's about that aspect. So that's the third aspect of his there. But for us to get to there, you need the other two parts. Like that. But all those three parts are fine anyway. Does that make sense?
Fine
meaning that it's Madan Mohan, it's Govindaji, it's Gopinath. So it's not a problem that the others are there.
Maharaj, is neutral chanting a sign of progress?
I heard something like Nugur chanting. Is that a sign of sin?
Neutral chanting.
Neutral chanting. Mm. What do you mean by neutral chanting?
Neither negative nor positive.
Means,
in the sense,
means you go to Switzerland and you chant there. Or just stand in front of a bank might be more.
Not having any material desires, but not in
not having material desires.
Not even devotional desires.
One will get purified, but then as the heart becomes purified, if you're in good association, then you'll start to develop that taste. But that comes by association. All these things come by association. You don't have good association, then these things don't come. Means they'll come eventually, because we're associating through the reading and that. So point is by that, the more we're associating, then the quicker the process. You understand?
So hearing is important.
Yes, because that's why of all the nine processes, hearing chant, that's the most important. So if we hear, then everything will start. I mean, that's what Krishna says, touch Srinu. You know, that if you hear, you know, that's the... So we're hearing, you know, here, we hear all the different pastimes. The acharyas make the point, you know, like that. So that's how we associate with those of the devotees that have that same kind of determination.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... yeah, then everything works very nicely. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in other words, neutral may be better than having material desire, but it's not as good as positive, that you're actually wanting to please Krishna. But in any case, it'll always be beneficial. So you're wondering how by breaking the words what we're ending up saying and all that? Or?
Yeah, like what Krishna actually hears from us.
He hears that we're chanting, because we're chanting on the order of Lord Chaitanya's given through the Parampara. And so therefore, then he'll hear that. Because this is, you're making the effort. Otherwise, the direct meaning is the standard meaning.
Because sometimes we chant Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, but we don't really mean it, you know.
But at least we're chanting it. You know, there's some, you know, how you say, some potential, you know, maybe in the future. It's like the, how you say in Bengali, I mean, you can say you know, you can say, what do you call it? Like you can say, "Don't give," meaning "don't give," or you can say, "Don't give," meaning "give." So you're worried that we're actually saying "Dhanam Janam Sundari."
Yeah, that's where the effort, you know, most of the time.
Yeah, but Krishna sees that you've done this. That's the thing about Krishna. There's a name for Krishna, or basically, he takes the essence. It means there's a saragrahi. So he takes the essence. So even though we're thinking all kinds of stuff, he just takes the essence, like a putana. He definitely had some ulterior motive. But he took just the activity, like he just took the direct meaning. So Krishna then will tend to take the...
The same group with the song.
Same group, just without the song. I'm not sure. We said Gurukul is there.
In Gurukul, what do they teach? Astrology and Vedic sciences?
Oh, that's the tour.
Yes, the tour. So being Saragrahi, he takes the essence, and so he sees that you're doing that. And so he'll reciprocate how much then you can handle of that. Because he can't give more, otherwise we won't be able to adjust with that. Because he can give all nice things, but like Sudama Vipra, he gives him everything, he just remains the same. But if we ended up, if you walked home and found that you had the opulence of Indra, then you're not sure if you'll remain the same. You know, first thing is buy a helicopter to go to Calcutta, right?
Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Prabhupada once about why did he give Gayatri Mantra to Jayananda. He doesn't even remember. He has asked him multiple times about the same Gayatri. Prabhupada said whatever he chants, Krishna will accept it.
Yeah, because there's also a rule that if you're chanting the mantra given by a guru with sincerity, even if you're chanting it wrong, you'll get the benefit of correct chanting. Like that, you get the syllables wrong or this or that. I forget but there's some rule. So there's hope.
He said that also about the Chinese Tamal Krishna.
Oh, nice.
The same principle when he heard how they chant.
Hale Kisina. Yeah, no, it's far out. Yeah, because that's all they can say.
There's hope. He said there's hope.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, so you don't have to worry. Okay, Rukmi continued. Release the girl before you are struck dead by my arrows and made to lie down. In response to this, Lord Krishna smiled, and with six arrows, he struck Rukmi and broke his bow. He didn't even say anything. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, Rukmi said, Before you lie on the battlefield, having been killed by my arrow, release the girl. I mean, he's going to kill him anyway, so it means kill the girl, kill Krishna, then the girls are automatically released. So. The other meaning is this. Because you are not killed by my arrow, do not release the girl. Krishna asked, why do I need the girl? Rukmi replied, so that you can lie down. He does not complete the sentence. With her on a bed of flowers, out of shyness. So, this is the whole point, is that those on this level, they can see all kinds of stuff. That's why I always laugh when the comment comes up, is that Radha Partasarthi, this is, you know, this is not correct, this is not our line. It's because they're seeing like this. Like that. So what's the problem? Srila Sukadev Goswami continued. The Lord struck Rukmini's four horses with eight arrows, his chariot driver with two, and the chariot's flag with three. Rukmi grabbed another bow and struck Lord Krishna with five arrows. Although hit by these many arrows, Lord Achyuta again broke Rukmi's bow. Rukmi picked up yet another bow, but the infallible Lord broke that one to pieces as well. Iron bludgeon, three-pointed spear, sword, shield, pike, javelin, whatever weapon Rukmi picked up, Lord Hari smashed it to bits. Then Rukmi leaped down from his chariot and, sword in hand, rushed furiously towards Krishna to kill him. Because any other thing he would deal with, because you see with the bow and arrow, then he defeats them. So now if he takes up these other weapons by hand, then he has to deal with those. Okay. Sword in hand, rushed furiously towards Krishna to kill him, like a bird flying into the wind. As Rukmi attacked, the lords shot arrows that broke Rukmi's sword and shield into small pieces. Krishna then took up his own sharp sword and prepared to kill Rukmi. Seeing Lord Krishna ready to kill her brother, saintly Rukmini was filled with alarm. She fell at her husband's feet and piteously spoke as follows. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, what will people think if they know that my brother was killed before my eyes? She was filled with fear because of this, not out of affection for her brother, right? Just because it's a family thing. You just, you know, you don't do that. The prema of the city women is dependent on public opinion. Samanjasa prema, or samanjasa prema, proper love. Whereas the prema of the gopis is not dependent at all on the opinion of the public, samarta prema, and is much stronger. However, one should not worry that the general definition of prema, that it is exclusive possessiveness of Vishnu and no one else, does not apply to Rukmini and other women. Or that it is exclusive possessiveness to Vishnu and no one else does not apply to Rukmini and other women, since they did not have genuine affection for Rukmi and other demons. This will be explained in detail later. Right? So it's just the social things, because you're functioning in that environment. So then you follow the duties of that, especially because we're talking Dwarka. So then the element of following the rules and all that is very, very prominent. So it's not, it's just because these are the proper rules, and otherwise in talking, the other ladies will say things and this and that. So, okay. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, somehow by fate, Rukmi had become her brother. Seeing Krishna about to kill him, she became unsteady with fear out of compassion or because people would blame her. It is proper to kill such an evil person. But she was very learned, sati. She considered, this low fellow cannot do anything to the Lord. The miserable person acts out of ignorance, like a sick person. Therefore, it is proper that Krishna show mercy to him, since he is related to me, and I have surrendered to him. Krishna thought as follows, he cannot do anything to me, that is true, but how can I tolerate his desire to cause her difficulties? Though I can save his life on her request, I will always have the desire to crush this person with evil intentions. And so, because she asked, then he'll deal. But at the same time, as he'll always want to, you know, crush him. Sri Rukmini said, O controller of all mystic power, immeasurable one, Lord of lords, master of the universe, O all auspicious, and mighty armed one, please do not kill my brother. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Rukmini first addressed Krishna as Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara means one who is possessed of inconceivable opulence and energy. Krishna possesses inconceivable opulence and energy, whereas Rukmini's brother had only limited military potency. Krishna is immeasurable, whereas her brother was measured in every step of his life. Therefore, Rukmini was not comparable even to an insignificant insect before the unlimited power of Krishna. She also addressed Krishna as the God of gods. There are many powerful demigods such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, but Krishna is the Lord of all these gods. Whereas Rukmini's brother was not only an ordinary human being, but in fact the lowest of all because he had no understanding of Krishna. Like someone who rejects and all that, then that's Naradhama, so that puts them as the lowest. In other words, a human being who has no conception of the actual position of Krishna is the lowest in human society. So that's a Naradhama. Right? They can be intelligent, qualified, all these different things. But if they have no interest in Krishna, no idea of Krishna, then that's considered the lowest. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Rukmini's utter fear caused her limbs to tremble and her mouth to dry up, while her throat choked out of sorrow. And in her agitation, her golden necklace scattered. She grasped Krishna's feet, and the Lord, feeling compassionate, desisted. Footnote 28. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes the quote-unquote worldly rule that one's sister is the personification of mercy. Jayaya bhagini murtihi. Even though Rukmini was wicked and was opposed to his sister's best interest, Rukmini was compassionate towards him, and the Lord shared her compassion. Okay. Because Manu mentions all the different family members, what they represent. So in here then, his sister is mercy. So then taking that mood, since he's connected with the sister, then he took that mood. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Then Rukmini addressed Krishna as Mahabhuja, which means one with unlimited strength. She also addressed Krishna as Jagatpati, the master of the whole cosmic manifestation. In comparison, her brother was only an ordinary prince. In this way, Rukmini compared the position of Rukmini with that of Krishna and very feelingly pleaded with her husband not to kill her brother just at the auspicious time of her being united with Krishna, but to excuse him. In other words, she displayed her real position as a woman. She was happy to get Krishna as her husband at the moment when her marriage to another was to be performed, but she did not want it to be at the loss of her elder brother, who after all loved his younger sister and wanted to hand her over to one who, according to his own calculations, was a better man. While Rukmini was praying to Krishna for the life of her brother, her whole body trembled, and because of her anxiety, her face appeared to dry up and her throat became choked. And due to her trembling, the ornaments on her body loosened and fell scattered on the ground. In this manner, when Rukmini was very much perturbed, she fell down on the ground, and Lord Krishna immediately became compassionate and agreed not to kill the foolish Rukmini. But at the same time, he wanted to give him some light punishment. So he tied him up with a piece of cloth and snipped at his mustache, beard, and hair, keeping some spots here and there. Having some fun. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Lord Krishna tied up the evil doer with a strip of cloth. He then proceeded to disfigure Rukmini by comically shaving him, leaving parts of his mustache and hair. By that time, the Yadav heroes had crushed the extraordinary army of their opponents, just as elephants crush a lotus flower. As the Yadus approached Lord Krishna, they saw Rukmini in this sorry condition, practically dying of shame. When the all-powerful Lord Balaram saw Rukmini, he compassionately released him and spoke the following to Lord Krishna. Srila Sanatan Goswami remarks, Balaram had a different bhava from Krishna since he was the elder brother, Vibhuhu. Thus he released him with affectionate words. Krishna said, but it is not proper to release such an offender. He was merciful. He was omniscient, Bhagavan. He knew that if he spoke to Krishna roughly and spoke to Rukmi with affection, he would receive relief. You know, if he spoke to Krishna roughly and spoke to Rukmi with affection, he would relieve Rukmini of lamentation, because then, you know, it's balanced. So then he knew that by taking that mood, it would balance things nicely. Because right? Krishna is having some fun here, but at the same time, it's then the elder brother that comes in, and then he deals in this way. So it's just all the different rasas, all the different flavors. Verses 37 to 49. Balaram consoles Rukmini. Lord Balaram said, "My dear Krishna, you have acted improperly. This deed will bring shame on us. For to disfigure a close relative by shaving off his mustache and hair is as good as killing him." Srila Viswanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, "It would have been better to kill him. Shaving him with a sword has made his face ghastly." To console the lamenting Rukmini, Balaram in this way engaged in an appearance of scolding Krishna. However, internally he was thinking, "O most clever brother, you have done what is proper." Right? Because this way then, being a relative, and therefore trying to please Rukmini, then he's done, but at the same time he's chastised him. Like that.
So again, we have two meanings over here, direct and indirect.
Yeah, well, this is what he was thinking. It didn't say that his words changed, but he was thinking that. So externally, he has to take the role, you know, like that, so Rukmini will be happy. Because he's the elder brother, so he has to, you know, see that things are going nicely. If his younger brother's not dealing seemingly nicely, then you deal in that way to make it all nice. Surit in this verse refers to Rukmi as a friend, relative, a brother-in-law. Factually, however, he is an enemy, not a friend. Therefore, the word is used to mean the opposite in sarcasm. You know, it says, yes, our friend here. You know, why you're dealing so badly with our friend here, right? You know, he's not our friend. Because later, Balaram will be the one who kills him. Lord Balaram continued, "Saintly lady, please do not be displeased with us out of anxiety for your brother's disfigurement. No one but oneself is responsible for one's joy and grief, for a man experiences the results of his own deeds." So if something goes, however it goes, nice, doesn't go nice, it's just from past deeds. That's all. But for the devotees, then that's always used in Krishna's service, to move forward in Krishna's service. For the materialists, then, because they don't have any real goal, it's always a devastation. But for the devotees, then it can always be used to advantage. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "Lord Balaram wanted to impress upon Rukmini that she should not be sorry for the consequences her brother suffered due to his actions. There was no need of being too affectionate towards such a brother." Right, so therefore he has the social aspect, so she's dealing like that, and because of the merciful aspect of the sister, then her acting in that way. And that. So he can only get these reacts. So he's telling Krishna this is improper because he's a relative like this. And at the same time, he's telling that, you know, Rukmini shouldn't be too worried about it because he's only getting the results of his own actions. However, whatever he's done, then this is what's coming to him at this point. Does this make sense? Yeah. So that way he deals on both of these sides. So that's the aspect of the Vedic culture, is to be intelligent and cultured enough that one can understand and deal with all these seemingly contradictory positions all very nicely, because what you're dealing with is people's feelings. So it's not specifically actions, it's the effect that these actions have. So how you deal, the mood, that's going to give something. Does that make sense?
We see Balaram, by speaking like that, he satisfies both parties.
Yes.
However, sometimes we try to do that and nobody's satisfied. So what would be the difference in the presentation? Because it sounds more or less the same, but somehow people are unhappy.
You have just the aspect of practice, you know, because Krishna and Balaram, having been around since time immemorial, they're good at this. In fact, they're the source of all this, so of course they'll be good. So it's just a matter of seeing, hearing, practicing. That's the point, is that it's not as much the results of becoming good at something as making the endeavor to do something nice for Krishna. And so in the process, by always applying ourselves in the process of devotional service, we will develop the abilities. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it doesn't. It comes just automatically. There's not a separate thing to endeavor for. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Then there was some other aspect. And also, as we become purified, then there's more effect. Like that. Because the more we're involved in you know, the day-to-day activities, then the ability to influence others is less. And the more we're become detached from material endeavor, then the one has more influence. Does that make sense? No?
I mean, I'm not clear about the connection. Like, what is the influence has to do with the detachment? People,
because you say it and they're not influenced.
Yes.
Because there'll be other things going on in the heart, so it doesn't have as much potency. So as we become advanced in devotional service, the heart becomes purified, we start to have more influence. That's it. So one is just the technique, you know, improves because you see the subtleties and finities and the moods and that. The other is that the heart becomes purified. And then you always have just, well, what does Krishna want? What should happen? Because if we are influential, now we'll become proud of that and that, and therefore then create trouble, or by it not working, then we'll surrender to Krishna, or, you know, just you have to see what's going to be the result. Or they're not qualified to actually, what you're saying is very good, but they're not qualified to appreciate it and get the benefit. And bottom line, the material world, nothing's really that great anyway. You know, but the closest you can get is by following these examples. But even then, it's never actually perfect. So we get it as good as we can. You know, it doesn't mean that we give up. We just try it from different angles, different, you know, be more aware. You know, there may be something that we're not seeing. But it's a matter of, for it to work means it's by Krishna's blessing. So when we're making a sincere endeavor to do things and Krishna's pleased with that, then that's when the results will come. So... Yeah, because his point is that he's working on his karma, so this is coming to him, so it couldn't have come unless it was his fate. So therefore, don't worry too much. You don't have to be too affectionate to such a brother who's not that qualified. Again, addressing Krishna, Balaram said, "A relative should not be killed, even if his wrongdoing warrants capital punishment. Rather, he should be thrown out of the family. Since he has always been killed by his own sin, why kill him again?" Turning to Rukmini, Balaram continued, "The code of sacred duty for warriors established by Lord Brahma enjoins that one may have to kill even his own brother. That is indeed a most dreadful law." Right? Because it's just in battle, this happens. That was Arjuna's point in the beginning of the battle, is that this code is a problem. Kunti Devi also laments about that the Kshatriya code then creates so much problem.
Okay.
Yes.
Also, the other day we discussed duties and personal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears from so many descriptions, like in this case and in the case of Dhritarashtra, you know, in negative,
mm-hmm.
the personal relationship almost always overpowers the duties somehow or other.
But if it's done in a Krishna conscious way, then that's not a problem.
Even if it conflicts with the Krishna conscious duties.
No, because the point is it's about the Krishna conscious duty, so we have to figure out how to be involved in Krishna's service in a way that is favorable to Krishna, but at the same time deals with the situation we're in. So sometimes that means doing direct activities, sometimes indirect. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It's like the gopis, they're living in their houses and doing all their duties. But they see that all those potencies that they're dealing with in the house, those are all Krishna. So in this way, they see that they're rendering service to Krishna. But it's not going to be as nice as rendering it to Krishna himself directly, because it's indirect. So Krishna, on his, how he is everything, then is Krishna. But it's not as sweet as Krishna himself personally.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's why, even though they're doing, they still want to be with Krishna. While the Shanta Bhaktas, they see everything like that, and they're satisfied wherever they are. You know, they don't have that need to go see Krishna. It's not that if an opportunity to see Krishna comes up, they don't take it. Of course they'll take it. But it's not that they have that burning need. So that means one can follow the duties and be Krishna conscious. So just maybe you have to switch, you had an idea how it could function in a direct way, and you may have to apply it more in an indirect way. You thought you were going to the temple, but you're going to the dentist. It's always the dentist, right?
Nowadays people go to the temple, we've seen it actually, and then, you know, the phone rings, and then going that way, just forgetting everything.
Yeah. So does that make any sense? So, you have to take all that and balance. So what service could be means what's the ideal? Okay, so how close can we get to that according to the situation? Then you have to, you know, you may have to move it down a few notches.
Because Krishna challenges everybody. He challenges Arjuna, Kunti, Dhritarashtra in his own way. He challenges Rukmini, and then later he will do it even more, you know, like in a playful mood and like that. So this choice, it's not an easy choice to make.
But at the same time, as we develop in Krishna consciousness, it becomes an easier choice to make. Because it's just whatever's good for Krishna, then we just do. But it doesn't mean that we don't have to think about it. It means the ideas, body, mind, and words are fully absorbed in Krishna's service. So we may have to think about something, how to make it work, how to do... Like Prabhupada said, when he was doing the purport, sometimes he'd have to think for days to get the right word. You know, other times it's just coming, but sometimes you really have to think about it. So that endeavor, that trying to do for Krishna and Krishna they're just absorbed in Krishna's service. So we have to, it comes down to that we're people, Krishna is a person, and so we're just having interactions. You know, it's that simple. It's same guys as yesterday. Yeah, what do you call it? Magpie robins. They look like magpies. The black and white European crows.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are magpies. Mm. And so they have here the same markings, but they're only this big. But they're not crows; they're robins.
Oh.
Generally, robins are that brown kind of color and like that. But these guys have that kind of markings. But they're somehow or another very fearless, those guys. They'll come up and sit right next to you and stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't like that. So there's two of them fighting. So.
Maharaj, in case of Kshatriyas, this is even more dynamic because the qualities of Kshatriya is one side he's merciful, another side is strict and forceful of punishment. So.
Yeah, well, that's where the thunderbolt and rose. So that's why this ability to work with contradictions is important. You know, nowadays, you just cut off anything and only take the one. But then they find that with time, they have to adjust. But otherwise, why do they have to come up with new systems all the time? Bhagavad Gita works today. It's worked 5,000 years ago, worked 1,000,000 years ago when it was spoken to the sun god. So it always works. But the modern things is every few months, every few years, you have to completely change your systems because they don't understand that you have to deal with both at once. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's kind of like, you know, meeting. So do we consider the public opinion on things and all that, but then that will slow things down, will cut us money, or do we just go right ahead and just not care? And they have to balance those two. That's the thing. It's not one or the other. They have to do both. So that's where it takes the intelligence to see how would you accomplish both of those. In other words, what's important from getting the work done and what's important from the public opinion? So the essence of those two is what then you have to apply. Does that make sense? So that's then the Vedic version, is how to do that. So we see that going on very nicely here. Is that okay? So here in Braj you see is that this is going on, but it's all in the aspect of rasa, of sweetness. So it has a different flavor. Well, here then it has that aspect of maryada, you know, the rules and all that, because they're in Dwarka, so this has the rules. But at the same time, it's all relations, it's all rasa. So then we see Balaram speaking, he goes back and forth between Krishna this and Rukmini that, and but don't worry about this guy, you know, like that, but then this and that. So he's just getting all the different angles, because that's how it works. But Krishna, you see, it just keeps going one way. So the Rukmini, it has to keep changing, because that's how girls will work. You know, you work something out, and it's all worked out that way, then they'll just flip it the other way. So then you have to, that's why you see, then they'll speak in the opposite. Then you catch that one, and then you just keep going until it balances. So.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he mentions that combination of Vaidhi and Raghunuk sadhana actually brings us to the Dwarka scene, because it's a mix of sweetness and opulence.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not quite sure how this combination happens. How is that even possible to combine those two?
Because they have that spontaneous attraction, but then they can shift into rules and regulations. Well, in Braj, that rag always is constant. So even when rules are there or different things like that, it doesn't affect the rag. So that's why when the rag is there, but then rules come up and you switch the other way, that's the dwarka aspect. Like we see is that when Krishna comes and then he, you know, kills the wrestlers, kills Kamsa,
yeah.
Then when he goes over to his parents, then he offers obeisances, they just stand there with folded hands because they've shifted into this other. And then his dealings, then it brings back the rag part. You understand? But in Braj, even there's all these different things, it doesn't affect the rag. They might get bewildered, but it doesn't affect the rag. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So where both of them are nicely situated, that's Dwarka. Whereas just the Vaidhi, that'll be Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
Whereas just rag, that's Vrindavan. So we're going up through the process of sadhana bhakti. That doesn't mean we don't follow sadhana bhakti. It just means that we're following the purpose of developing love for Krishna, following the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. So doing that, then with that determination, our practice of sadhana will take us in that direction. And so then we'll be able to follow the rules and regulations, you know, with that attachment for Krishna, but it's not about the rules and regulations. So in that way, the rules change because their meaning, it all changes. It's not that you're not doing the same activity, but now instead of being, it's a rule, this is what has to be done, you, by doing this you get purified or all these different things, and by this you develop this quality, that. No, it just changes into, this is what's pleasing to Krishna. Does that make sense? So when the acharyas say it changes, it doesn't mean that, you know, you do something completely different. It's not whimsical. It's not, so it has the same form. So,
yeah.
So it just takes on that. And now and again, you may accept something that you normally wouldn't do, like Rukmini. She wrote a letter to Krishna. Normally, you wouldn't do that, but she wrote. But it doesn't go against the rules of rag. You know what I'm saying? Vaidhi maybe, but not rag. So that's where it changes. But you see, is that the purpose of the Vaidhi is that you're following a structure that is favorable to Krishna, because if we didn't have the Vaidhi, we'd just do anything. So the Vaidhi ensures that. But as one gets situated in Krishna consciousness, then one may do things that are beneficial to the Krishna consciousness, but may not be the standard practice. But as we see, it's a rare thing. Most of the time you see Rukminis doing all the standard things.
Yeah.
Is that something? So like that is there. There's a structure, but then within the structure, it's like poetry. You have the rhyming, but sometimes they don't rhyme it just to bring out something. But if they just don't rhyme it the whole time, then it's, you know, it's not poetry anymore. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, okay. So now he says, you know, you don't kill even if they deserve to be killed. But then the Lord Brahma, you know, then, you know, even brothers have to get, you know, that. So in the battle they do, but this is, now it's not battle. Right? Again, Balaram addressed Krishna. Blinded by conceit with their personal opulences, proud men offend others for the sake of such things as kingdom, land, wealth, women, honor, and power. To Rukmini, Balaram said, your attitude is unfair, for like an ignorant person you wish good to those who are inimical to all living beings and who have done evil to your true well-wishers. So he just keeps like this. And he, you know, he gets until everything starts to balance and that, and then it's all right. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Balaram again turned towards Rukmini and informed her that the current duty of the Kshatriya and human society is so fixed that, according to the principles of fighting, one's own brother may become an enemy. Then a Kshatriya does not hesitate to kill his own brother. In other words, Lord Balaram wanted to instruct Rukmini that Rukmi and Krishna were right in not showing mercy to each other in the fighting, despite the family consideration that they happen to be brothers-in-law. Sri Balaram informed Rukmini that Kshatriyas are typical emblems of the materialistic way of life. They become puffed up whenever there is a question of material acquisition. Therefore, when there is a fight between two belligerent Kshatriyas for kingdom, land, wealth, women, prestige, or power, they try to put one another into the most abominable condition. Balaram instructed Rukmini that her affection towards her brother Rukmi, who had created enmity with so many persons, was a perverse consideration befitting an ordinary materialist. Her brother's character was not at all admirable, considering his treatment of his friends. And yet Rukmini, as an ordinary woman, was affectionate towards him. He was not fit to be her brother, and still Rukmini was lenient towards him. Because her qualities are very good, his are not. Right? So, like that. There's a particular point you're trying to get to, and then you speak the various angles until that's appreciated. Does that make sense? Because the point is these, you can take so many different aspects because the Vedic process is so subtle that it has so many elements that are there. So whichever one is the appropriate one to bring the proper balance in consciousness, then that's what's there. So that she's afraid and all that, then you have to get rid of that. And so therefore you say the things of Krishna, you don't do this, so that she'll be pacified, that nothing's going to happen to her brother. But at the same time, it's all his karma. At the same time, you don't need to actually be so affectionate to someone who is so unqualified. In fact, he actually shouldn't be your brother. He's so unqualified. You know, so it leaves her in a good position, but it also shows the balance so that compassion is not misdirected. Does that make sense? Misdirected compassion always creates trouble. Yes.
When we speak to people and try to help them, for example, devotees, and they're in an emotional state, philosophy usually doesn't really work.
Well, you have to go, you either catch the mood and this and that, if you can do that, or if you're going to work with the philosophy, it has to be said with that emotional consideration. But you have to go through to it just depends upon what's the whole point. You either go all the way through to Vedantic kind of elements like that, or if you can, you pick religious aspects that will be supportive. But you want to be careful in that because you don't want them to oppose those things. Vedanta, generally, they won't. So, but there has to be the understanding that you care about their position. So we see Balaram first open with that to make Rukmini feel better than he took her side on the whole standing, and that, and then chastise Krishna. But at the same time, is then he's pointing out that he's just getting the results of his karma, and then pointing out that actually his karma is bad, right? But he's taking it through steps, so that as the moods adjust, then you can take it further.
And another point, when here Balaram, he says sometimes opposing things,
yeah,
one and another, and we know then he will kill Rukmini eventually.
Yeah.
Despite what did he say, whatever.
No, because that's at this point, then this would be the appropriate thing here. But then later, then Rukmini is going to just cheat. And so he shouldn't be cheating.
Because sometimes that's what happens. We tell people to pacify them something, but when situation changes, you have to adjust what you said. And
yeah,
it's
that's
taken,
just the way it goes.
And it's taken as if you don't keep your words, or, you know, the devotees are chanchala, they change in their minds.
Yeah, but you also have to tell them that is the situation the same as before. Because when you said it, this was the situation. This is the direction. But now you've changed the situation, so that means then the process changes. You can't just pick and choose what you like.
Maharaj, in such situations, in between two parties, can we say that we can be heavy with both the parties so that the balance has been sought?
It's there, but you have to see that you... You have to be careful that if you're heavy with both parties, that then though the two... So if you're heavy with both parties, then what does that mean? That means they're allies.
Yes.
So you have to be careful of that. So that's why you see it's about the one and then it's favorable to the other, and then speaking something here, and then, you know... You understand? So it has to be that they feel that there's that connection. Then you can say, because there Balaram is first saying it's improper, he's a relative, and then relatives are not killed, maybe banished but not killed. But then he comes to the next thing, but code between warriors when they're fighting over something that's the appropriate thing, then that law is not applying. And at the same time, then he takes it. The next step is that actually Rukmi is, you know, just getting the results of his karma, you know, and he's not that qualified of a person. So therefore, you know, you shouldn't have this kind of compassion for him. That's improper. Right? It means that it's the formal aspect and all that you can do, but it shouldn't be so much more. Right? But you have to remember, is they're showing us, teaching us, because for them, this is just all they're having fun. You know, since when does the... You know, Mahalakshmi have a douchebag for a brother? You know, it's like... You know what I'm saying? When you're doing the Lakshmi pujas, is there this weirdo standing on the side there or something? You know, you go to do the puja and somebody goes, wait, you know, the old lady comes in, wait, where's Rukmi, bring Rukmi, and then put him there. Okay, now you do the puja. Right? Have you ever heard that? No? Not once? Anybody? No? No, okay. So, it's not. So, the whole point is it's just pastimes at all. That's why he said, technically, he shouldn't be your brother. But at the same time, is having compassion for such a brother is not proper. Right? Means for your own, that means you could want to, that he's not killed, he's a relative, and that's the proper thing to do. That aspect. But the emotional part, that's not so important. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, that's just the way it works, because you see, he dealt with the emotional to start with. Does that make sense? So in other words, you're not dealing necessarily with solid logic here, you're dealing with emotion. It's just the way it works.
So someone just praying means being emotional.
Someone?
Someone just praying, that was being discussed by Jiva Goswami.
Someone just a praying.
Samrithi praying.
This prema of the city women is dependent on public opinion. Samajas a prema. Proper love means it's proper. Everything's done properly, according to the rules, because they're city people. Whereas the prema of the gopis is not dependent on the opinion of the public, so samartha prema. So that's Samanjasa Prema. So it's just, that's just how it works. So that's her consideration. Because she wasn't really caring about him. But because the form of it looks like that, then Balaram comments on that. You have to remember, he's the elder brother, so he can do that. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. Balaram spoke to Rukmini, enlightening her by means of Dharma, in order to pacify her, right? Because her considerations were of Dharma, social aspects, so then he uses that too. Such instructions were not necessary for Krishna, since she did not give up lamenting. He speaks with anger at first, enlightening her with teachings of jnana, containing a secret message for her to have her giving up lamentation. Just as you desire bad for those among all beings who appear to show animosity, you desire good for Rukmi and others who appear to show friendship. And to others you are neutral. This is disturbed intelligence, like that of ignorant people. There's another meaning in which Suridam modifies Duridam. Among all beings you wish bad fortune to Shishupal and others who are confirmed as enemies, and you wish good to their friends, like Rukmi who assists them. Thus you have disturbed intelligence. You should think of them as enemies as well and wish them bad fortune. Yeah, because it's not actually seeing what's intent. Somebody's behaving nicely, but it's actually behaving badly. You're dealing with the nice. So if you're dealing on the devotional platform, then that's good. If devotees are trying to render service, though they may have material desire, Krishna just takes that they're rendering service. And so it works out nicely there. But on the social platform, then you have to be careful. Because then you're... So they seem to show niceness, but at the same time they are connected with those who are inimical. Lord Balaram continued, "The Supreme Lord's Maya makes men forget their real selves, and thus, taking the body for the self, they consider others to be friends, enemies, or neutral parties. Those who are bewildered perceive the one Supreme Soul, who resides in all embodied beings as many, just as one may perceive the light in the sky or the sky itself as many." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. "The spirit soul is of the same pure quality in any embodiment of matter, but those who are not sufficiently intelligent see only the bodily differences between animals and men, literates and illiterates, rich and poor, which cover the pure spirit soul. Such differences observed merely on the basis of the body are exactly like the differences between fires in terms of the various types of fuel they consume. Whatever the size and shape of the fuel, there is no such variety of size and shape in the fire which comes out. Similarly, in the sky, there are no differences in size or shape." Right, so the fire is fire. It's a bigger piece of wood, you see more fire, but that's only because of the shape. The wood, the fire, is always the same. So then making these distinctions of who's friend, who's enemy, these things, these are not actually the real position. Right? It means you may use those because of practical application of activity. But in actuality, as far as the soul is concerned, then there's no importance of this difference. Like that. So then it comes down to, are they God conscious or not? You know, do they have potential to be God conscious or not? That's the only real consideration. Srila Jiva Goswami adds, "We directly see variety in the universe, so then there should also be friendship in the universe." How do you say that? This is illusion about Atma. All the jivas are spiritual in nature, and thus actually have no difference. They are only one, ekaha. As amshas of Paramatma, they all have similar sarup. I mean, so they all have that mood of servant. They all have the same kind of basis of what jiva is. There'll be the individuality of the personality. But the point is the nature of jivas are all the same. So that we'll say, oh, these guys are good, these guys are bad. Technically, no. They're all jivas. So then you deal in that way. So now it's just a consideration, do you need to consider the social elements or not? Right? And so therefore, if you do, then you work within that realm. And if you don't, then you don't have to worry about it. So then you just look at someone's unqualified, but they're interested in Krishna consciousness, then they're given that attention. So,
Unqualified meaning on a social level?
Just whatever it is. It's just whatever is their disqualification, but if they're interested in Krishna consciousness, then that's actually a qualification. But like, say, materially, let's say that person, you may preach to them, make him a devotee, cultivate him as a devotee, but you may not hire them. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't have the material qualifications. But spiritual, that anybody can take. Anybody who has that interest can take it up. So it doesn't matter what the position or background. So... Paramatma with inconceivable energy is like the sun. The Atmas as amshas of Tatastha Shakti are like particles of light in the sun's rays. And so we're in the sun's rays, we're not the sun's rays. So we'll see, it comes up in I think at chapter 87 about the jivas floating in Brahman, but it's not that they make Brahman, they're floating in Brahman. Is that something? Yeah.
All right. Does it mean that the Brahman is its own entity?
It's a feature of Krishna.
So it's separate from the jivas.
Yes. Like that. Jivas, the ones that want to merge in the Brahman, they're floating around in it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't compromise Brahman, comprise Brahman.
Right.
Like that. They just happen to be floating, just like particles of dust happen to be floating around in the sunshine, but it's not that they make the sunshine.
Maharaj, can you say that the sun is like this particular analogy which is saying about sun, sunlight and the particles in the... So you can say that the sun is equal to Krishna, the rays are equal to the Shakti, and this is a Tatastha Shakti, like internal potency.
I mean, you can take it that way, but on that aspect you're doing, but what we were talking about, you take the sun is the... It means you have the sun god. That's the Bhagavan. The sun, that's Paramatma. And then the sun rays, that's Brahman. And the jivas happen to be floating around in Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Since the Atmas are like the light of the sun, because of the inconceivable energy, Achintya Shakti, there's no room for raising an objection about them. They are one because the Atma is different from the body. There is variety only because of bodies, right? So that what we know here is that all the material aspects, Prasna, that's all coming from the bodies. That's what makes the difference like that. Does that make sense? But the souls don't have that. They all have the same quality, same nature. So the individuality, that will be within the spiritual context. But in the material context, everything we consider here, that's all according to the conditioning. So that's just dead matter. So that's that. We're not going to take the political position of dead matter matters. Right. Especially because we know it goes back into tamas, into that darkness. And then, yes. There's no variety in the Atma, right? Because they're all Satchitananda, they're all the same, have all the same quality. How can variety be perceived? Since the Atmas are all without material disturbances. The variety arises because of variety in the Atma's location. Examples are given. In the first example of light perceived as many reflections, there is difference perceived between the object and its reflection. Thus, another example is given, the sky and the pot. Right? You think that the sun in the pot and the sun in the sky are different, but actually they're the same sun. And then if you have many pots, you think there's many suns. But there's only one sun. So that's the point. Paramatma is one person. but we think of, but he's expanded everywhere, so we think there's unlimited Paramatmas. No, there's only one Paramatma. Like that. And he's extended everywhere. Because you know, Kirudakshai Vishnu sits in his place and all that, and he's expanded for, through everything. Just like Hiranyagarbha is then expanded through everything there as the universal form in that aspect. There's another meaning. Atatatvachcha matrivad atmahi paramo harihi. The Lord is called Atma since he spreads everywhere and is the source of everything like a mother. Quoted in Sridhar's Bhagavatam commentary. The Supreme Lord Atma is one only. He is the one Atma in all those who identify with their bodies. He is in reality the best, superior to all of them, exhibiting the highest prema. The Atmas, those who identify with bodies, are accepted by fools to be supreme. When illusion dissolves in some persons, they perceive Atma in its true form according to qualification, with a shadow of prema. An example is given. If one has not seen the sun, a lamp is accepted as supreme. Having not seen the expansive sky, flies take the space in an udumbara tree to be the supreme sky. Right, so you have these big banyan trees, and inside there, what's there, so much, you know, spaces, they take that as to be the sky. They don't know that there's outside that tree, there's the expansive sky. So, Lord Balaram continued, this material body, which has a beginning and an end, is composed of the physical elements, the senses, and the modes of nature. The body, imposed on the self by material ignorance, causes one to experience the cycle of birth and death. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. This is explained by Sridhar Swami. The body has three aspects. Adibhuta, dravya, the senses, or adhyatma, prana, and adidaiva, guna. Adibhuta. Oh, okay. Yes, adibhuta dravya, the senses should be. Yeah. Adhyatma is the life, heirs are the. Okay, and then the adidaivam is guna. Dravya is the adibhuta. Tanmatras are sense objects and gross elements.
Okay. It's been a while that we used that term.
Yes. Because that was all the second and third canto. Yeah, because there's so much. Because this adiatmak, adidaivak, and adibhota can be applied in so many areas. Mm-hmm. It's just that Prabhupada would use that one about the kleshas, so we know it in relation to that. Mm-hmm. But it actually applies to everything. Yeah. Okay, prana is the adhyatma, or senses. Right, so adibhuta is the tanmatras, the sense objects and gross elements. Adprana is the adhyatma, or the senses. Guna means the adidaiva, or the sense devatas. There's another explanation. Right? Because you have to have the gross matter and the sense object. Then you have to have the prana, or the sense itself, and it's working. And then you have the adidaiva, the devatas, who then, guna, who give the qualities to these things and control these things. Right? Because our senses then see something, but that's all controlled by the devatas. There's another explanation. Prana refers to action. Guna refers to the sense objects like form and taste. Another meaning is that this verse explains the cause of absorption in the present circumstances. The body of Rukmi, Esha Deha, has a beginning and end, etc. Right, so here, the physical elements, the senses, and the modes of nature. So the physical elements, that's the adiatmic, the senses, the adibhotic, and the modes of nature, the adidaivic. So it works easier. Okay. Lord Balaram continued, O intelligent lady, the soul never undergoes contact with or separation from insubstantial material objects, because the soul is their very origin and illuminator. Thus, the soul resembles the sun, which neither comes in contact with nor separates from the sense of sight and what is seen. And it's because of the sun, then there's sight and the ability to see that. Right? There's sight and what you can see with that sight because of the sun, but the sun technically is not involved in that process. Right? So the soul, because of the soul, because of what they do and their interest, that's why you get the particular body you end up with. But having that particular body, it's not that the soul is that. Right? It may be the reason that it happens, but it's not actually, it doesn't actually become that. Though we may identify with it. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, because the Atma is covered by the body is perceived as the Atma. Actually, however, the Atma is not affected by the body, nor is the Paramatma affected by the Jiva. Right? If the Jiva is not affected by, technically not by the body, then Paramatma, he's not going to be affected by the Jiva. You don't have to say, but he's also not affected by the body, because Jivas, are affected by that. Are unaffected. He's then above the both of them. First, this verse can be explained as referring to the Jivatman matter. There is no permanent contact of the soul with the material body, which is impermanent, having a beginning and end. Because there's no contact, then there is no separation. Right? So that's why there's no fear. One is on the self-realized platform, there's no fear because there's nothing to lose, because we're not the body. So where's the fear? Fear comes because something's going to be lost. Does that make sense? But if we don't identify with anything of this material world, what's to lose? Right? And that wasn't meaning, how you say, a city in France. Yes.
All right. Also, in the previous discussion, we mentioned that there are, stula, linga, and karana shariras.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, we have upadis in all the three positions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite difficult to give them all up. It's a very serious endeavor. Because in one position, in the gross position, we can give it up, but then in the subtle, it's more difficult. But then in the current, there.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, we don't even know it exists.
Yeah. But that's why then, that's the first instructions, these, that the soul is separate from all this. So when the soul thinks that I'm the controlling enjoyer, that is the karana sharira. So when we identify as I'm servant of Krishna, and I should try to engage, the body, mind, and words, these three adi, daivik, adi, bhotik aspects in the Lord's service, then and not for my enjoyment, then that neutralizes that whole thing. So if that becomes constant, then it's gone. So that's why if you work on that one, then the others will be easier.
You mean the top one?
Yes, if we work on that. I'm not the body. I'm servant of Krishna, and I act in service to Krishna to please Krishna. So he's the controller. He's the enjoyer.
Mm-hmm.
We're not. We're only the instrument. Then that deals with the subtle and the gross bodies that we have. Because polluted consciousness is then the cause. Then you have a subtle body, and then the subtle body is the cause of the gross body.
Right.
So you change the polluted consciousness to pure consciousness. Then you change also the effects of the body. The body will remain in whatever it is, but being in a purified state because of the purified consciousness, then it can be used nicely in Krishna's service, whatever its ability is. does that make sense? You know, like, let's say you are cooking in some other kitchen. You know, you use what's there to the best of your ability. You know, you don't have something, that's what you use. But when you get back to your natural position, then you have your own kitchen. So, yeah. Okay, so stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.